So, today we'll have a short discussion on Bhagavad Gita. It's already quite late. I'm sure everyone is familiar with Bhagavad Gita here. And so I just open the page that has the shloka. Fourth chapter, text 2. Evang parampara praptam imang rajor shayo vidu shakaleneho mahata yoga nashto parantapah. I'm sure all of you know this verse. So it's a very important verse for us. Not for us, for everyone. The fourth chapter, Krishna is talking about this transcendental knowledge of Bhagavad Gita. Now, this is the difference between mundane knowledge and transcendental knowledge. The mundane knowledge can be acquired by dint of one's own endeavor. Does everyone understand English here? No need to translate here. Now, the difference between mundane knowledge and transcendental knowledge is that mundane knowledge or material knowledge can be acquired by dint of one's own endeavor, by dint of one's own efforts, right? Because what is material knowledge? Material knowledge means the knowledge that is received by our senses. Now we see something, we get to know about that. We have some knowledge about that. We hear about something, we have the knowledge about that. We touch something, we have some knowledge about that. We smell something, we have knowledge about that. So these knowledges are material knowledge. The knowledge that has been acquired by our senses, even the knowledge that is acquired by our mind, also is material knowledge. The knowledge even acquired by our intelligence, that is also material knowledge. For how we acquire knowledge by intelligence, to give an example, say for instance, I say a person who hasn't seen, say, Vienna, but he gets the understanding that the people in Europe are white, right? So he concludes, although he didn't come to Vienna, but he concludes that people in Vienna are white, right? So that is the knowledge that we acquire by our intelligence. But that is also material knowledge, dealing with our material senses. But spiritual nature is beyond our sense perception. With these senses that we have, we can only perceive the material nature. But spiritual nature is beyond this material nature. And spiritual nature cannot be experienced by our material senses. We cannot see the spiritual nature. We cannot see the spiritual objects. Like, although we know that all of us are spirit souls, but if I ask you, did you see your spirit soul? What will be the answer? No. Right? Because you cannot see the spirit soul with your material eyes. Because spirit cannot be seen with these eyes. Or spirit cannot be touched with this hand. So everything that is spiritual is beyond our sense perception. So if we want to acquire knowledge about that nature that is beyond our physical experience, then how should one take that knowledge? How? Can you tell me? Yeah. Good. By receiving the knowledge from somebody who has the knowledge. Right? Now, then the question will come, generally people, outside people ask, how do you know that he has the knowledge? Right? Now if I ask you, how do you know that he has the knowledge? What will you say? Mataramon? If I ask you that, why are you taking, how do you know that this person has the knowledge? Yes, but still, you know, like so many people are saying so many things, right? And so many people are claiming so many things, right? Like there are so many sadhus from India. They say that you can pay them only $5 and they'll take to the spiritual sky, right? So how do you know that he is bluffing and your guru is bona fide? Yes, that's also good. But the main thing is the way he acts, right? His action proves that he has the knowledge, right? And like, what is so unique about the devotees of our society? Because their activities are unique. The devotees in this society, they have given up materialistic life and accepted spiritual life, right? So that is a proof that they have transcended the material nature. When everybody is caught up with meat eating, intoxication, gambling and illicit sex, why ISKCON devotees have rejected that? Why? Because they have got a higher understanding, right? They have got the taste of something that is beyond meat eating, beyond intoxication, beyond illicit sex and beyond gambling, right? That's why they have rejected these for sinful activities, right? So that shows that they have the knowledge. Like that people, usually I tell people when they get into an argument, I tell them that, look, first of all, you practice what our devotees are practicing, and then only you can criticize them or find fault with them. Because when somebody is caught up with all kinds of mundane activities, he is not qualified to criticize or find fault with others. Right? Only a superior can find fault with inferior. Not inferior cannot find fault with the superior. Of course, nowadays the society is turned upside down. Everybody is becoming communist. So everybody is finding fault with the superior. Right? But that is improper. That is improper. Like in the school, can the students find fault with the teacher? Was it ever allowed? At least in my time, it was not allowed. Is it allowed here now? I mean, it may be allowed because, I mean, things are changing here, right? So the same way, and this is how also this democratic system is useless. We can see that the democracy doesn't work. Like, because people from the lower rung cannot elect the leader, right? Like in a kindergarten school, will you allow the children to elect their teacher? No, because they do not know what is good for them and what is not good for them. The same way mass is ignorant. The mass of the people, most of the people do not know what is good for them. So they should not be allowed to elect leaders. And that's why the rogues and rascals are becoming leaders. Like in India, which is considered to be such a cultured country, used to be such a cultured country. I mean, most of the ministers and politicians are just rascals. They're smugglers, they're hooligans. I mean, the more degraded one is, the more one can move the mass. Because if a good man comes and tells people, stop meat eating, stop gambling, stop illicit sex, then people won't listen to him. They say, we don't want you. Like a kindergarten school, I mean, imagine, in a kindergarten, if the children were allowed to elect their teacher, and then one teacher came and said, I would be very strict with you. I would see that you study properly every day, you come to the class every day, and then lead a very disciplined life. Otherwise, with this cane, I'm going to smack you. Right? Do you think the children will elect him? No. But somebody comes and says, I will give you, as soon as I come to the class, I'll give you a candy and then or a chocolate, and then after that, right after you have finished the chocolate, you'll be allowed to go out of the class and play in the field the whole day. So everybody will say, oh, he is our teacher, we want him. Right? So that's what is happening in democracy. The way Prabhupada said, demon crazy. And actually democracy is a state before communism. It's just a transition. You see, it's actually very interesting to watch, to notice the progress of history of this day, this age. In the beginning, it was, even Western, let's consider the Western history. In the beginning, it was controlled by the church, right? So that means the spiritual people were giving direction to the king, right? The society was actually controlled by the church, directed by the church. But then, at one point, the kings rejected the church, right? And they became independent, right? Like British history, there was a king called Henry VIII, and he wanted to marry a prostitute, and church didn't allow it. And so he said, okay, I don't care about the church. So he rejected the church, and he was the king, so he had the power. So what could the church do? So he became independent. So initially it was controlled by the Brahmins. Then the Kshatriyas took over, right? So that was the feudalism or monarchy. Right? The kings were ruling the country, right? And then after monarchy, what happened to the society? Capitalism came in, right? That means, what is capitalism? The society dominated by the Vaishyas. Whoever has money has the power, right? So the capitalistic society, and then after capitalism came democracy, right? And it is actually a step before or step towards communism. Like after Vaishya, what? Sudra, right? And Sudra's ruling, when the Sudras come to power, that is communism, right? Power to the people, right? all the lagar arbiters, they become the ministers, right? And when they rule the society, you can well imagine what's going to happen. But they do not understand that actually the whole world is running towards communism. America is the biggest, or those who are considered to be the biggest opposition to communism, they are propagating democracy, right? The Western Bloc in Europe is propagating democracy. But actually, very soon, maybe 20, 30 years, or maybe even if it is 50, 60 years, what difference does it make? Soon, it will become, from democracy, it will become communism. And it's happening also. Like in France, they are so much wanting communism. They want communism. And I think in Austria also, there's a big move. Socialistic, yeah. Yeah, Hare Krishna. So this way we can see that how the whole society is becoming a Sudra society. And in a Sudra society, there's bound to be chaos. And the only way to save the world is by spreading Krishna consciousness. Let the real qualified leaders become the leaders of the society. And how does one become a leader? Or how does one become a real qualified leader? By becoming Brahmin. And what is a Brahmin? Brahmin means one who is situated in knowledge. So one who is situated in knowledge, he should lead the people. And when one becomes situated in knowledge, he becomes detached from material enjoyment. When somebody becomes situated in knowledge, like the devotees of, we can see, devotees of ISKCON, like, all of them are basically detached. Otherwise, why they should leave home, Why they should leave their material enjoyment and take up this life of austerity? After all, this life is austere. To become a vegetarian is austere. I mean, initially at least. To give up intoxication is austere. So these, to abstain from these activities is actually austere. And why devotees are accepting this austerity voluntarily? Because they have been situated in knowledge. Because they know if they indulge in these activities, they will be suffering. That will lead them to suffering. Right? Like, why does one give up eating meat? It's not that meat tastes bad, right? In the beginning, I mean, when one becomes a devotee, he already has the habit of eating meat, right? And he is actually attracted to meat eating. Like, I know in Bengal, they are into fish eating. And it's the biggest difficulty for them to give up eating fish. And Prabhupada once said, if I allowed them to eat fish, then I could have filled up this whole temple in one day. But we won't make any compromise. We don't make any compromise. So, the life is austere here, but voluntarily devotees have accepted this austerity because they got the higher taste. And they are qualified to become leaders. Because devotees don't exploit people. Because what the devotee has to gain? When you don't, actually, this is also a very interesting thing to notice. Like when one abstains from these four sinful activities, he cannot really become immoral or sinful, right? Like the very foundation of morality and piety is actually founded on this abstaining from these four sinful activities. Like, for instance, when you don't eat meat, when you don't take intoxication, when you don't gamble, and when you don't indulge in illicit sex, what are you going to do with money? Right? Money doesn't really have any value to you. Right? And, I mean, of course, besides engaging in Krishna's service. But, so devotees do not become cheat. Devotees do not cheat. Right? Because one thing is, what am I going to do with this money? Like if, say for instance, the karmis, they're always into cheating. Because they want money. Because in order to get intoxication, in order to have illicit sex, in order to gamble, they need money. Right? And so they want to get that money by hook or by crook. But a devotee doesn't have any inclination towards acquiring illegal money. I mean, devotees, whatever they get, they simply use it in Krishna's service. So fine, you know, when he gets it for Krishna's service, that's very good, but then he doesn't want to unnecessarily cheat people or cause any kind of harm to people. So that's why devotees can be trusted. And when the devotees become leaders, then people can trust them. Nowadays, they cannot trust the leaders. That's why people are in such anxiety. They think that they elect one man and they think that this man will be very good. But then after a few months, he realizes that this man is a crook. Right? So he wants to get rid of him and wants another person. So he elects the other person thinking that this man will be good. But then that man also turns out to be a crook, right? So everybody who he elects turns out to be a crook. So he cannot trust anyone. There's a saying in Bengali, Je jai Lankai, shei hai Ravan. Now, whoever goes to Lanka becomes Ravan. You know Ravana, the king of the Rakshasas. The same way, whoever becomes a political leader nowadays turns out to be a Ravan. But we don't want Ravans, right? People actually don't want a demon as their leader. Generally, people want a demigod to be a leader, a person who would be, or people actually want the Supreme Personality of Godhead should be the leader. right? So God becomes the leader only when a devotee comes to power. So that's why I was saying that this movement is the only hope for the world. And devotees have to become very, very serious. I mean, devotees have a great responsibility to change the whole world. And that means we all have the responsibility. It's not a matter of, you know, who has been 4 years in the movement or who has been 14 years in the movement. To us it may make a big difference. Somebody who is 4 years in the movement and somebody 14 years in the movement, right? But actually, in the light of Krishna consciousness, what is the difference between 4 and 14, right? Actually, when you are young, then 1 year also makes a big difference. Like I used to think that the boys, those who are 1 year senior to me, they were big guys, right, in school. But then when you grow up, then 1 year difference, what to talk about 1 year difference, 10 years even doesn't make much of a difference, right? So when a person is 60 years old and another person is 70 years old, both are old men, right? So they are 60 and 70, 10 years difference doesn't mean much. But when somebody is 10 years old and another person is 20 years old, that's a big difference. And what to talk about if someone is 100 years old and another one is 110 years old, right? Or somebody is 1,000 years old and somebody is 1,010 years old. So that difference does not really make much of a difference. So same way with us, I don't think it makes much of a difference few years after and few years before. But what actually matters is one's initiative to spread Krishna consciousness. And we all must be very, very serious that actually it's a big responsibility. Consider the whole world. What is the population of the whole world? Does anybody know? What are they? Okay, let's not consider the whole world. That's too big. Let's consider Austria, right? 7.5 million. And how many devotees we have? 25. Huh? No, I mean, how many devotees are working in Austria? 25, right? So 7.5 million divided by 25, how much is it? It's about 400,000, isn't it? About 400,000. About 400,000 actually. 400 into 25. Oh yeah, right. That makes 10 million. Yeah, right. 300. So about 300,000. So that means one devotee has to take the responsibility of 350,000 people, right? That means one is to 350,000. One devotee equals to 350,000 karmis. So that means, can you imagine how big a responsibility it is, right? But of course, we do not think in macro dimension. We think in micro. Like we think in terms of, well, I am one. If we think that in 1 month's time, if I make one devotee, right, that will be my goal, right? So in 1 month, you cultivate people and make one devotee. Now, then this person also makes another devotee in 1 month. Or you can say, look at it this way. So 25 devotees, like we make a project that double it, right? Double it is our principle. That's what Prabhupada gave. So by the end of 87, each one of us will make two devotees, right? Then if we make a target, to make two devotees is not very difficult. Eh? So then, by the end of 87, we'll have 75 devotees. Now, if all the 75 devotees take a vow or make a object, that they will, all of them will make two devotees. So that will make 225 devotees, right, by the end of the year. So this way, we have to expand. And we can do that only when we become concerned about spreading the movement. It's a big task we have. And we cannot possibly waste our time. We cannot possibly keep fighting among ourselves. And who got the Mahaprasad and who didn't get Mahaprasad, right? Or things like that. We cannot afford to waste our time that way. We have to become very, very serious. And then when devotees come, we must make it a point that we make it so wonderful that everybody who comes would love to stay here. And then only we can progress. Often also, I notice sometimes it happens, like we are very interested to get new devotees, make new devotees. Right? When somebody visits our temple, we are so nice, we want to offer him everything, we tell him that Krishna consciousness is the best thing, and we try to, then one day he gives up his home and joins the temple, right? And then we don't care about him, right? I don't know whether it's like that here, but in India it's very common. And once we got them shaved up, we think our business has been accomplished. And that's why many devotees leave the movement. And so we must make it so wonderful that whoever comes, he would like to stay here. And actually, it is, in the beginning, it is very difficult. Because when somebody leaves home and comes to the temple, it is actually, he feels bad, he has his family, he has a place where he belongs, where people care for him. And then if he comes here and we deal with him with a very impersonal attitude, then he will feel bad and he'll go away. So we must make our temples like the spiritual sky. Actually, this is the ideal spiritual sky. I mean, why do we want to go back to spiritual sky? Why do we want to go back? Because it is wonderful to be in the spiritual sky, isn't it? Now, if we say that we'll show you the way to the spiritual sky, right? And when they come here, and if it is not wonderful, then they'll get disillusioned. They'll think that, well, if this is spiritual sky is like, then I don't want to go back to Godhead. So we must make it very wonderful. And everybody actually likes friendship. Everything can be compensated by friendship. If we offer people friendship, then they will do anything and everything. I mean, we can remember in our early days, we underwent so many difficulties with friends, right? But, you know, whatever you do with your friends is fun. I remember once two of my friends, no, actually one of them came with me. He was an English friend of mine before I joined the movement. So we went to Jagannath Puri, and then we decided to walk along the coast to Konarak, which is about 25 kilometers. So we thought 25 kilometers is not a big distance, but it's actually very tiring to walk on sand, and it was very tiring, although the weight. Fun because we are two friends together, and he was ecstatic. He came to India, he went to India, and he was very excited, although it was difficult. Right? So when we are with friends, whatever we do, it becomes joyful. So now if we devotees become friends, then also whatever we do, we will enjoy. So, two things we must follow. That's like, one thing is that we must become very, very sincere about Krishna consciousness, and we must make it a point to attract people to this movement. It is not that only the senior leaders will make devotees. Everybody actually should make a target of making devotees. Is it difficult to make 2 devotees a year? How many did you make? Any. It's high time you start making. Yeah. I mean, what actually matters is cultivation. We must befriend them, right? Like, of course, our old friends, I was totally disillusioned with my old friends. But at least we can make friends. And so many people actually like devotees. When they come in close contact with the devotees, they like it very much. Because they can see that these people are really idealistic. They are really together. And they are really sincere about their spiritual life. So people become very, very impressed. And if we cultivate people, if we cultivate, say, 12 people a year, one man, one person a month, right, then out of these 12, I'm sure at least 2 will join. And then only our jatra will blossom. Right? Otherwise it's a struggle. And for how long we can struggle? We can struggle for the time being, but if there is some crisis, then everything will fall apart. Everything will run away. Everyone will run away. So it's very important that we become serious and we become interested in delivering conditioned living entities. That is the duty. Otherwise, how we are delivering people? We distribute book, and so people, those who take books, we can take their address and then we can cultivate them. Or we can call them up. Or did you read the book? How did you like it? And if it's favorable, then we can say, well, if they have any question, then we can say, okay, one day I'll come down to your house. Or why don't you come to our temple one day? And this is how we can begin. And this is how we have to influence them and make them feel that our temple atmosphere is so good that their house will appear to be like hell. And they literally feel themselves that, oh, why should I live in hell when I can enter into heaven? And then they will move into the temple. Hare Krishna. Does anybody have any question? Okay, so thank you all very much once again, and see you all again tomorrow. Hare Krishna. All glories to Srila Prabhupada and all glories to Srila Vishnupada.